Welcome to the daily VFN Radio Highlights, where we're keeping the conversation light at VFNTV.com. Enjoy.
I mean, I begin to ponder, you know, and that's what we're doing. We're just kind of like, you know, God, trying to hear God. God, what is going on, you know? He talks about, Jesus was talking about, you know, farmers understand the seasons, when to plant, when to harvest. And he said, but my people don't even understand the seasons. You know, we're just seeking like the sons of, you know, Issachar knew the seasons and the times, you know, and that's what we're trying to do. God, you know, what are you saying? What's going on? And we first want to say, you know, we mourn the death of John Paul Jackson, and we celebrate, obviously, with him. He's in heaven now, having his reward, and our prayers go out to the family and those in the Streams ministry, and our prayers are with you. Well, you think about America, and, you know, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all, right? That's what our Pledge of Allegiance. And all of our rights come from God. And we're a Christian, a Judeo-Christian nation. I mean, our laws, all the monuments, if you've seen the previous programs that we talked about, you know, Newt Gingrich did a whole thing on the monuments and how Scripture is on every single thing, our courts, the prudent concept of the prudent man comes from the Mosaic laws. And I mean, just it's from our first president on through, you know, it's just been, you know, a Christian nation. And so I was pondering, I said, you know, to be authentic and to be to kind of understand where we're at, you know, past presidents, you know, joined themselves with the Christian faith. They, when they wanted to run for office or something, they went out and they began to meet with the people of the nation, and they met with Christians and said, you know, I stand up for, you know, Christian values, and, you know, that, you know, I'm for the values of the Christian church. And everybody, you know, in America think, you know, that's great, that was wonderful. Not everybody, but majority of folks, you know, didn't have a problem with it, and they would win overwhelmingly, like 60-70%. I don't know, it was a huge amount of the votes. And it's like, well, that's, you know, why was that okay? Oh, it's okay because we're a Judeo-Christian nation. That's why, because it's not abnormal. But all of a sudden, we're pondering, why are we currently, in our current leadership, why are they focused on promoting Islam? What is the goal? Why is, you know, Valerie Jarrett's desire, as we talked about in a previous program, which is the friend of the president, Michelle Obama, and, you know, the advisor to the president, why is it her desire, as she said at Stanford University, to bring Islam into America? And then you start thinking about, it makes me think about when the president was, actually he was running for president, and what he said about America, it helps us begin to understand. As a matter of fact, I want you to take a look. This is the president saying what, you know, we say, you know, America's a Judeo-Christian nation, but our president said when he was running for office, that we're not. As a matter of fact, listen to the president.
Whatever we once were, we are no longer a Christian nation, at least not just. We are also a Jewish nation, and a Muslim nation, and a Buddhist nation, and a Hindu nation, and a nation of non-believers.
When you think about it, it's like, well, no, we are a Christian nation. We're a Judeo-Christian nation that's welcoming to all other, you know, faiths that come, but we don't do away with Christianity. But you're starting to think, you say, oh, wait a minute, you know, maybe where past presidents embraced Christianity to, I guess, build enough backing to be able to be, you know, elected and move their agenda, maybe our current president, what he did was just embrace the Muslims. Maybe he embraced Islam and thought, this is a way that I could get to become president. And then, but when I get there, the same way that Christians would say, you know, you need to stand up. We stood up for you. You need to stand up for us. And it's almost like we're seeing, you know, people in Islam and Muslims are going, you know, hey, you need to stand up for us. We stood up for you. But it makes me think about what happened when the Democratic National Convention was going on and they took Jerusalem as the capital of Israel out of the platform. In other words, we were going to have a country that said Jerusalem is no longer the capital. We don't recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. and it was taken off the whitehouse.gov's website, but they took it off the platform during there. So I have a minister came in and began to say, wait a minute, we got to put this back. But notice the reaction. Watch what happens at the Democratic National Convention when they just push and force against the will of the people that are at the Democratic National Convention. They forced against their will to say, we're going to write Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. We're just going to put it in. And watch as they begin to boo for that reality. It's amazing. As a matter of fact, take a look at this.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This summer, I was proud to serve this party as the Platform Drafting Committee Chair. As the chair, I come before you today to discuss two important matters related to our party's national platform. As an ordained United Methodist minister, I am here to attest and affirm that our faith and belief in God is central to the American story and informs the values we've expressed in our party's platform. In addition, President Obama recognizes Jerusalem as the capital of Israel, and our party's platform should as well. Mr. Chairman, I have submitted my amendment in writing, and I believe it is being projected on the screen for the delegates to see. I move adoption of the amendment as submitted and shown to the delegates.
A motion has been made. Is there a second? Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, the matter requires a two-thirds vote in the affirmative. All those delegates in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those delegates opposed say no.
No.
In the opinion of the... Let me do that again. All of those delegates in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those delegates opposed say no. I guess.
You've got to rule, and then you've got to let them do what they're going to do.
I'll do that one more time. All those delegates in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those delegates opposed say no.
No.
In the opinion of the chair, two-thirds have voted in the affirmative. The motion is adopted. And the platform has been amended as shown on the screen. Thank you very much. Thank you. Now, Governor Strickland, thank you again for your service.
So you're looking at right here, we're starting to begin to understand that it was against their will that they just kind of forced back into the platform again, against the majority's will, not all, to force back in, okay, we're going to recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. And it's like, now we kind of see why Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is under such great pressure now, and why he's coming, I guess, March the 3rd to speak at Congress, and why the White House is so upset, because we're starting to see, it makes sense now, because if in fact you embraced Islam, and you embrace the Muslim population, said, you know, this is the population that will help me get in office. They'll help me get there. I mean, the 20-year pastor of our president, Reverend Jeremiah Wright, who said very specifically, he said, you have to understand he was selected before he was elected. He was selected before he was elected. And so it looks like what we're seeing here, I don't know if you saw the Arab Americans that were standing up and they were booing, you know, the fact of Jerusalem being chosen as, you know, the idea of him saying against their wills what they were booing, because they were, the no's overwhelmingly said, we don't want Jerusalem. That's pretty much just what happened. They just said, we didn't want it. And they didn't realize that they weren't really asking their opinion. They were just doing it. But I thought it was pretty interesting, too, that she walks up and she says, you have to give them what they want. If you could hear her in the background, you have to give them a little. I want to watch this one more time. And think about prophecy. Think about, you know, God moving. Think about when they were saying, crucify Jesus and let his blood be up on our head. And they're just saying, give them what they want. They didn't realize that they were participating in a turnover of the Son of God. And now you're watching people participating in the turning over potentially of a nation that we got to say, wait a minute, we need to go back in the direction. Matter of fact, take a look at this one more time.
All those delegates in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those delegates opposed, say no. In the opinion of the... Let me do that again. All of those delegates in favor, say aye. All those delegates opposed, say no.
Stop it right here. Wait. A little bit more. Okay.
I guess...
Let them do what they're gonna do.
You hear that? That's it right there.
I'll do that one more time.
He said, you gotta ask them, you gotta do what they tell you to do. And what's interesting was, you know, this former governor and this pastor from Ohio, former pastor, he just, everybody has a right. In America, you have a right to share your opinion. You have a right to petition your government. You have a right to do these things. But when he stood up to make his petition, all of a sudden you're seeing people in the same room take his picture. They took his picture. And it's like, you know, why would you take, and why they're screaming, boo, I mean, what does our nation come to? And it's like, this is the whole thing is that we're a Judeo-Christian nation. And that, so when you stand up for who we are as a nation, you're standing up for the Judeo-Christian principles and foundations that's been laid out. And to walk away from that is to walk away from America. America, as we know it, will not stand if we walk away from God. It won't stand as it is. It'll be, you know, totally fundamentally transformed. And so, but we're understanding why, you know, why won't we just say that's radical Islamic terrorism, you know, radical jihadists? Why won't we say those things? The whole world's beginning to say it. The Egyptian prime minister, Sisi, he's saying it. He's saying Christians are being persecuted. It was Egyptian Christians that were beheaded on the shores of Tripoli in Libya. And he immediately responded, and he's open. I mean, this is a Muslim leader in Egypt, Prime Minister Sisi, that's standing up for what's right. And it's like, why aren't we standing up for what's right? Could it be that the decision was made early on to embrace the Muslim population and embrace Islam because they would help him get in office? And now, according to Jeremiah Wright, his former pastor for 20 years, one that mentored him, one that married him and Michelle Obama, said, you have to understand, he was selected, so he first has to do what he was selected to do. Those that selected him, he has to do that first, and then he can do the other things. It takes a little bit of time to do things. And it seems like to me, when all this is going on, and why that somebody won't speak this reality of, like, we're having a radical war against radical believers of the Quran in Islam. That's what's going on right now. They're doing exactly what's written in the Quran, although people may have a different interpretation of it. You can actually read that. We have on the VFN TV's website, VFNTV.com, you can go to the VFN Torch, and one of those particular choices on there says, you know, Islam 101. It just will show you very specifically, compares them side by side so you can see what's taking place. It says, you know, smite the neck of the unbeliever. You know, it says put people in slavery. It says, you know, tax people. And these things are written in the Quran. And it's like, you can't embrace that and embrace freedom at the same time. You cannot embrace a caliphate, a government based on the Quran, and embrace the U.S. Constitution at the same time. And so we got to make up our mind, are we a Judeo-Christian nation? But it kind of helps us understand, you know, if the president did embrace Islam, he did think this is a great way to do it. And, you know, prophetically, from what I have experienced myself, the Lord just laid on my heart that there was some sort of covenant signed. I don't know this in the natural sense. I just know it in my heart. There was some sort of covenant signed in the basement of the White House with Islam. There was an agreement with Islam in the very beginning. And we're seeing, as Valerie Jarrett just said, you know, Stanford University, according to Charisma News, that's exactly what's going on, wanting to bring Islam into America. This is, you know, when you think about what's going on, is this a normal process of, you know, somebody decides to run for office, they go around and finding out who's going to stand with them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for years, obviously, we saw candidates stand up, go find, you know, Christian groups and coalitions and stuff. And
speak with them.
You know, I think Ronald Reagan did that. I think
Bill Clinton did that, mm-hmm. and others have done that as well. And it kind of makes sense because we're a Judeo-Christian nation.
Right.
You know, to meet with a Jewish federation and say, you know, we support, I mean, it just makes, it fits sure. who we are as a people. Well, our current president, this is the first time this we've ever, somebody said, you know, what I'm going to build a coalition. It appears, I don't know, but it just appears that every meeting, every iftar dinner, all these different things, you know, where we used to see Christian dinners take place in the mm-hmm. White House, and we'd see, you know, Christian events and, you know, Easter egg rolls and these different things, and it would just kind of make sense with our culture. Right. Now we're having, you know, iftar dinners, which is, you know, part of celebration of mm-hmm. Islam, and we're seeing, you know, meetings in the White House with why there's radical Islamic terrorism taking place and people being beheaded. People who profess to be following Islam are doing that. Why people who are openly saying they're following Islam, meeting and talking with the president about what's going on. So this is a whole new concept.
In the White House.
In the White House. And you know, and then, you know, you see, it just seems like our president's hands are tied. I mean, he's a very intelligent man. Mm-hmm. But it's like his hands are tied in regards to he can't the people that he chose to partner with. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
To be able to get there. I mean, you're looking at, because we just saw the Democratic National Convention. We saw, you know, this big sign, this young man, this young, couple had, you know, Arab Americans that are there, and this Ohio pastor stands up.
Mm.
And he just, that's what you do. You go to those things, everybody expresses your opinion, you take a vote, and
delegates.
The platform is what you stand for as a people. What the, if that Ohio pastor, former governor, wouldn't have stood up and done that, then our, it would have been, I guess, probably been honest, but they would have said, we don't believe that Jerusalem probably should exist, much you know, in the hands of Bibi,
right, of Israel,
of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, and so as the capitals, definitely. And then they booed because the governor or the mayor out of San Francisco, where he's from,
Los Angeles,
he didn't have any idea. They didn't understand how things work. They weren't asking their opinion. They were just going to push it on through.
Exactly.
But I thought was even they took his picture. That's what bothered me. They took the picture of the pastor who mm-hmm. said, "We believe in God. We believe that Jerusalem is the capital. We'll recognize it's the capital of Israel." And they took his picture. It's like, why are you taking my picture? What does that have to do with anything? And it's kind of freaky, especially if you're all together and you're just trying to, you know, whatever.
Right.
But then I thought was pretty interesting too is when they begin to commence this year's or that year's
convention,
they brought in, you know, Islam to pray.
Oh, yeah.
You know, part of the, I think, Muslim Brotherhood or some form of that to pray.
We have that related for you on the torch, but it's exactly right. They were nights preceding the big event, they had all these prayers going on, Muslim prayers, absolutely.
Right. But it makes sense, though, if you embraced Islam to mm-hmm. be able to get in office and the Muslims are helping you stay in office, but as in any embracing, you know, whoever embraced you, they expect you to stand up for their platform.
Yes, they do.
And we found out, you know, in history that, you know, they expect you to do that.
Yeah.
And so you're kind of caught because the people that help you get to a place,
mm-hmm.
they remind you how you got there.
Yeah. In fact, it's said about Valerie Jarrett, and we'll try to get this related for you, that she helps to keep the president's conscience on the issues that and the people that helped him get elected. So he's constantly reminding him to remember those people.
Right. And she just said at Stanford University that she is Muslim
mm-hmm.
by faith and her
born in Iran.
She has dinner in the home of the president and Michelle Obama for ever since.
Yeah.
And that's she's a friend.
At one time she had a Secret Service detail, which is unprecedented for advisors
right.
for the president.
But she did say very specifically that's her goal. One of her goals was to bring – how was the quote? Can you find the
We're going to get that quote for you.
And so – but I thought too, you know, so it starts making sense when you're thinking about, well, this is who he partnered with. I mean, he partnered with, it appears, you know – American Muslims or Muslims in general, it seems like in the world, because when he made the apology tour, I mean, he was going to Muslim nations and he was bowing down to some of the Muslims and he was, I think, you know, based in his own heart, you know, and only God knows a person's heart. that he thinks this is a good way to be able to resolve all these problems in the world. But the truth is, you know, Jesus said, the Son of God, he said, there will always be storms. There will always be troubles.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, the troubles are going to get worse. So you're never going to have the ability as a human being to go resolve these things.
Mm-hmm.
Because men are going to make up their mind, do you want God or do you want God? Not any God.
Right.
Jesus is Father and the Father of us who actually make Jesus Christ the Lord of their life. But I thought this was interesting. What's that quote again of Valerie Jarrett?
I have the quote here.
You have to understand. You have to understand. I mean, if you had wallpaper, and thank God we don't have wallpaper anymore. I mean, I don't know what happened in that season of life. But if you have wallpaper, I'm just expressing John's opinion. And that, but, you know, in that, Valerie Jarrett is like wallpaper.
Yeah.
In regards to everywhere you see the president, you see.
Oh, yeah.
And this is, and some of the reports are this, that, and that there's never been a president that spent so much time in his residency in the White House.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, why reportedly, you know, while the Libyan
Muammar Gaddafi?
No, the Libyan Chris.
Oh, Chris Stevens, Ambassador Stevens.
Ambassador Stevens and all was being killed right there. He was there inside of his residency right there. And think about this, according to Valerie Jarrett, that when he's in his residency, he's with her because that's where she's at.
Yeah.
I don't know if she has the couch folds out into some bed or something like that.
Murphy bed or something.
And I think it's cool to have friends with you going through life, you know, and that's cool to be able to do that. But in regards to embracing Islam, you have to understand that's like the North Pole embracing the South Pole. That's like yes embracing no. That's like the Constitution embracing tyranny. I mean, they're the opposites of each other. Because, you know, they say God is not Jesus' father. Jesus is not God's son. And he has to come back and repent for calling himself that. And he will help this 12th Iman or whatever's, you know, going to come out of the Mecca hole that they walk around. And so the thing is, like, okay, you know, you have a right to believe whatever you want to believe. But this is what we believe. And we're a Judeo-Christian, Christ-centered nation. Hear this quote before we go to break. I want you to hear this quote because this was just said, according to Charisma News, at Stanford University by the friend of Michelle Obama, the First Lady, and President Barack Obama, who this unnatural – he's like, you think about, man, he's a great father because he's with his family. Like he eats with his family more than, you know, it's amazing. It's like, oh, but I forgot Valerie sits at the table with him.
Yeah.
Let's see what does she say here?
I'm an Iranian by birth and of my Islamic faith. I'm also an American citizen and I seek to help change America to be a more Islamic country. My faith guides me and I feel like it is going well in the transition of using freedom of religion in America against itself.
So, man, she is a good planner and strategizer.
Yeah, you know,
as a matter of fact, the CBS segment they did on her, where she was, you know, when they had that picture of men bowing down, little statues of men.
Oh, yeah.
That she said, I was just going around Congress. I was just talking to the local mayors going around Congress. And, you know, what is, and this, I love what the brain surgeon, Ben Carson, and he says, you know, this PC is going to kill us, being politically correct. And that's what's being used against Americans. It's like there's everybody, don't be scared. First of all, if it's right, it's right. Even if you die for it, it's right. We get back from the break. We're going to, speaking of somebody who says something right, you know, Franklin Graham speaking truth about this matter. And we've got to just begin to speak it. You'd be surprised. I would assume 98% of Americans feel that way. There's just a few folks that have a squeaky wheel thing going on, and we got to stand up for what's right. So we're just kind of exploring this idea that, you know, we got to be honest. If we look at things honestly, and, you know, past presidents have, and even those who didn't become president, they've embraced certain groups to be able to, you know, you got to build a large enough part of the population to support you to get in office. That's the way it works. But this is the first open president that just embraced, it looks openly, Islam. And it's almost like Islam's pressing him to, okay, now it's you're going to have to push this thing through. You're going to have to push this thing through. And it makes me think about, you know, he said it, right? The Cairo speech.
Cairo speech. First speech, international speech. He goes to Cairo University. And in his speech, he says he feels that it's his responsibility to defend, come against, really, any kind of negative stereotypes of Islam wherever they may exist. We've talked about this before, but as a president of the United States, your responsibility is to defend the country, defend, have the borders protected, you know, the country protected, but not...
Personally, you know, you have your faith and you can do whatever you want to do. You can be a missionary for your faith and all that.
Yeah, as a citizen.
But you can't, you don't use the your governmental office to be able to defend us. I don't know. You know, we've actually defended Christians. You know, we went around and defended the Christian faith in different areas. This is the unique thing about it is, though, but it's because we're a Judeo-Christian nation.
Right.
It's kind of awkward taking a Judeo-Christian nation and then defending a antithesis religion that denies Jesus Christ as the Son of God, that hates Jews and wants Jews, you know, calls them dogs and pushes them in the sea and all that kind of stuff they talk about. And then, but then you hear, we heard at the beginning of the program, he said if he believes what he says.
He said it.
If he believes what he says, you know, just taking him at his word, is that he says, you know, he believes that we're no longer a Christian nation. And this is, you know, God is totally in control. And I really believe that we're being rebuked by God, whose son is Jesus. I believe we're being rebuked, and that if we'll receive this rebuke, Proverbs chapter 1, if we'll receive this rebuke, he said, then he will actually begin to restore us. He will forgive us, and he will let us know. He'll begin to tell secrets. He'll let us know his secrets. But he said, if you don't listen to my rebuke, he says, then disaster is going to come upon you. This is Proverbs chapter 1, by the way. You can read this. He said, the disaster will come upon you, and you will call for me, and I'll just laugh. Mm. That's what he says. So disaster doesn't move God.
No.
What moves God is us obeying him, loving him, acknowledging. And one part of obeying God, because some people religiously will go, that's right, you have to walk perfectly before God. And it's like, no, you don't do that. This is perfectly walking before God. When you sin, you call it sin, you're sorrowful for it, and you ask God to forgive you, and you do everything you can by God's grace and the power that we have at the finished work of the cross of Christ to stay away from that sin, but understanding at any moment outside of God, we would fall to sin.
That's right.
But that's obedience. He's cool with that. That's, you know, not the terminology. But, you know, you're listening. So he's actually, I think the president's been pretty honest with, we're just shocked at the honesty and shocked that people don't care that that's what's going on.
Right.
And you got to make up your mind. This is what Jesus said. You can't serve them both. You have to make up your mind which one you're going to serve. And you can't serve, you know, Muhammad and Jesus. You got to make up your mind.
That doesn't work.
It doesn't work. And as a matter of fact, listen to Franklin Graham speaking truth. I love this
Thank
man.
God for
Thank
Franklin
God for
Graham.
Franklin Graham as Greta's talking to him. Listen up. Watch this.
Reverend, I just read your Facebook page in which you say, in part, I am perplexed as to why our president will not acknowledge the truth and call Islamic extremism what it is. In a statement, the White House even called the 21 Christians who were beheaded Egyptian citizens, refusing to identify them as Christians. Why do you think the president and the White House called them citizens and not Christians?
Greta, I have no idea. I'm just I'm baffled by this White House. And it seems as though they want to try to believe a lie, that everything's okay when it's not okay. And Greta, let me just say something about these men who cut the heads off. And I'd like to say something to them if they're watching. And I want them to know that what they did was evil, what they did was wrong. It was a sin against God. And I know they did this thinking they were pleasing God, but it doesn't. It's a sin. And God loves you, and God is willing to forgive you. But you've got to be willing to confess your sin to him and ask for his forgiveness and by faith invite his son, Jesus Christ, into your heart. If you do that, God will forgive you for what you have done and God will heal your heart and he'll invite you to be with him for eternity in heaven. Greta, I think it's important that the Muslim world know that God does love them and he's made a way for them to be with him in heaven. And that's through faith in his son, Jesus Christ. They don't have to cut off heads. They don't have to die in a holy war. It's simply by faith. And Greta, this is something that the White House doesn't understand, the religious aspect of this. And these men are doing what they are doing, thinking they're pleasing God, because the Quran teaches this. Islam says you can have slaves. Islam says that you can cut the heads off of people, that you can kill Jews and Christians and Yazidis and anybody else that doesn't believe like you. And this is a religious aspect of this that they just don't accept, and they refuse, even to this day, will not accept and don't believe it.
Does it make a difference? Because I know we're going to talk in a minute about the Attorney General says, but does it make a difference if the president says it's, you know, Islamic extremists or what he calls whoever these people are who are cutting heads off?
It does make a difference, Greta. We have to understand who we're dealing with, and you have to deal with it accordingly. And the president is ignoring the fact that these are Islamic extremists. These are terrorists, and ISIS is a terrorist organization, and they are bent on destroying the West. They've already said they want the flag of Islam to fly over the White House. The president, his entire life, his whole influence has been Islam. His mother was married to a Muslim. His father's a Muslim. Then she married a man from Indonesia. He was raised in Indonesia, went to Islamic schools. I assume she was a Muslim. So his whole life, his experiences have been surrounded by Islam. He only knows Islam. And he's given a pass to Islam. He's refusing to accept and understand the evil that is in front of him.
So when you're looking at, you know, he's just being honest. He's right. You know, thank God for Franklin. And it makes me think about this op-ed that was taken out in the LA Times, you know, by the president. And, you know, prior to that, he wasn't even calling the Egyptian Christians. He was calling them Egyptian citizens that have been beheaded on the shores of Tripoli. And but in this op-ed, I thought it was pretty interesting that it still was light on the whole thing. And there's always like, we're talking about, this makes sense. If you got to say, you know, it makes sense if you embraced Islam to help you get and stay in office, because they're going to be your networkers and your campaigners and all that kind of stuff, whatever. But, you know, it makes sense why all of a sudden, you know, when you hear there's 21 Christians beheaded at Tripoli, and all of a sudden he talks about potentially some Muslim young people that were killed in Atlanta that has not yet been proven as a hate crime yet.
North Carolina.
And it's like, that's a tragic thing that happened there, but it was not yet even determined that that's a hate crime or yet. But if that is who he's trying to appease, if he's trying to appease the people who he embraced, you know, but to me, you know, it's going to be a tough thing to do, because you can't embrace Lucifer mm-mm. and think it's going to come out good.
And not
it's,
win.
It's not going to be good. They're waiting for this. Anyway, so in this thing he talks about in his op-ed in the LA Times, we'll make it available to you on the VFN Torch, go to VFNTV.com. But he talks about, you know, what we got to do is try to get jobs for people. If the people who are in America, that in the world too, but America that are unemployed and more likely to be disgruntled with things, that we got to get them jobs.
Jobs.
Got to get them. Got to get them jobs. And we just heard that the State Department, she said that we need to help them get jobs over in the Middle East.
And she's sticking to that story.
Yeah.
She's staying with it.
And so, you know, and they talk about the Marshall Program that happened in Great Britain. But first we actually, you know, eliminated Hitler from the face of the earth. And then we helped with jobs.
Right.
They first dealt with the enemy. And it's like, I really sense in this, and I'm going to say something prophetically at this point before we go to break, is I think part of the reason why the world's being organized and America's being organized and the pressure is getting on right now, because there are economic injustices. There are, you know, parts of our society that hasn't have a fair shake at education, a fair shake at economic realities that other parts have had. And for years, you know, people have pushed at this and it wouldn't move. But it looks like Saul Alinsky's Rules for Radicals has been used to the point where now we are almost being threatened with violence, with potential young people in our nation being violent, joining the concept of ISIL and jihadists if we don't get them jobs. It's almost what it seemed like when you're reading that, and you're kind of sensing this is all making sense now. And of course, the way that whole thing works, if you're if you give up God when you're afraid, you'll give up America when you're afraid and your freedom. Mm-hmm. And so I think, you know, brace yourself and be prepared, because a judge, and I don't have the actual judge that has said this yet, but when they ruled against the immigration law, saying that was that the president overstepped his executive orders, went out of procedure, it was a procedure issue, that I think a judge said this, and I can't, so I'm just get off, I can't quote the actual thing, but he says that expect violence.
Mm.
And it's like, why is our president promoting seemingly to be okay with violence? Why are judges being okay with violence? And some of the things that the Lord is showing me prophetically through prophetic visions and dreams, and showing others, and showing Rick Joyner, and showing Keychara Bradford, showing others that, you know, that are seeing that there's going to be an uprisings in our country. There's going to be uprisings, but we're looking at our leaders saying, this is what's going to happen if you don't give us what we want. And to me, it sounds like a rebellious teenager trying to get their way versus going, you know, let's do this thing. And then say in the opt-ad, you know, we need a civil process that so that people can be heard, a fair civil process. And I'm thinking, like, that's not – violence is not a civil process.
Well, you look at what happened in Missouri in Ferguson. Many of the rioters that were there, many news networks were reporting that they weren't even citizens from Missouri, not the majority of them.
Well, the answer is not a job, because you remember that the lady that was being apostolized for Islam by her coworker in Missouri, I guess it was, you can tell me what state it was, that she said no to him. Now, she said no to him. She had a job, and he had a job. They were working together. And when she said no to him in America, so they both had jobs. Jobs are not the issue, State Department. Mm-hmm. He cut her head off in the workplace. And if the supervisor would not have had a gun in that workplace and killed this man, he would have cut more heads off.
That's right.
So the job wasn't the answer. It is the belief system of Islam, you know, people who truly believe 100% the original text of the Quran, that says, you know, smite the neck of the unbeliever. There's a reason why the necks are being cut. There's a reason that says it. That's why. And you can go to the VFN Torch, go to Islam 101 on the VFN Torch, and you can see all these comparisons. It's real simple. Got a simple little, you know, people who study the faith of Islam that can show you specifically what's being done and how it lines up. It's not a peaceful religion. It is not a peaceful religion. And if you would have seen just recently the man walking through the streets of Paris who's a Jew and saw what was happening in a society that just says, okay, let's just embrace Islam.
Mm-hmm.
They were calling him a dog. They were saying terrible things about him. We have that available for you on the VFN Torch. This is the reality in the future of Jews and Christians if we continue to embrace that which does not embrace God through his son, Jesus Christ. You know, when you think about it, say, well, this is our opinion and this is what we think. But, you know, as Christians, we can go, by the way, if you take the ton off Christian, it's Christ.
Right.
We're followers of Christ. That's what Christian means. Christian means we're Christ followers. And so that kind of gives it away. But a lot of times people don't understand that's what Christian means.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people say, you know, if you're from America, you're a Christian. Well, not necessarily.
No.
But we still can be, I mean, you can still build a house and say that could be a house. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
But it could be built out of the right stuff. But the presidents might not be right. Okay, so you can just look at the words of Jesus. I mean, when Jesus talked about it in John 10:1, in the Gospel of John, he talks very specifically about this. He says, very, verily, truly, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he says, I tell you, these are very small words. Okay, he says, I tell you, you Pharisees. He says, anyone who does not enter the sheep's pen, I mean, think about this. Anyone who does not enter the sheep's pen by the gate, but climbs in any other way. I mean, think about that. And this is Jesus. This kind of resolves a lot of, you know, conflict. People say, isn't there some other way? And it's like any other way, he says, is a thief and a robber. He said, the one who enters by the gate is the shepherd of the sheep. The gatekeeper opens the gate for him, and the sheep listen to his voice. He calls his own sheep by name and leads them. When he goes on to say, he says, listen, my sheep know my voice. Very, very, I say unto you, I am the gate that my sheep come through, and all who have come before me are thieves and they're robbers. But the sheep, they listen to me. And so they're, you know, if you haven't yet begun to understand as a Christian, you need to hear the voice of God. You need to hear him. It's not, I'm not talking about an audible voice of God, also, although that happens sometimes. But the scriptures, you know, abiding with him, impressions that he gives you. The Holy Spirit just lets you know that ain't right, you know, and you can mm-hmm. repent. But if you haven't yet begun to abide with the Lord, we have a simple plan for you. It's a free plan. You request it at iabide.org. But he's saying, listen, my sheep know my voice. So if you don't spend any time hearing the voice of the Lord, you could be easily following a thief or a robber. And so if, in fact, someone says that Jesus Christ is not the Son of God, they're denying the gate, the access to God, because he is the only way. And if somebody says there's another way to God and Allah is God, then Jesus is saying this. That's a thief and a robber. Mm-hmm. That's a thief and a robber. Any other way is a thief and a robber. And so it's pretty clear that when we embrace as a nation thieves and robbers, that we're going to lose our nation. The theft of our nation, the theft of our Constitution, the theft of our foundation, the theft of our freedom, the theft of the First Amendment rights and the Second Amendment rights and all these gifts that God has given, you know, sinful men, because we said we want to build our nation on you. I mean, if you embrace a thief, John, I mean, think about it. If you embrace a thief, why are you surprised when he steals from you?
Right.
Right?
Exactly.
When you think about that, it's like, I just want to give him a chance, you know. He just got out of Rikers prison. You know, he's got, yeah, he did 20 years for robbing from every bank in town. And he's like, you know, you could have put him on stock. Why'd you put him behind the cash register?
Right.
And it's like, and then if he steals from you, everybody's not like, I'm shocked. Mm-hmm. I can't believe the thief stole something.
Right.
Well, Jesus is saying, and we're not saying this, we're saying what Jesus is saying is correct, that he is the truth itself. And when he speaks, that is truth. And what he says is that very, very, I tell you, all you religious leaders, you know, Pharisees, anyone who does not enter through the sheep's pen of the gate, but climbs in any other way is a thief and a robber. And he says that he is the gate. There is no other way to God, the creator of the universe, the one who sits encircled by an emerald rainbow. Think about it. There's no other way.
Mm.
And so we've got to make up our mind, this nation, and the church has to make up its mind that you cannot embrace light and dark at the same time. You know, God showed me very specifically, you know, in this vision, he showed me that I was, you know, witnessing and sharing the love of God with some young people, and they were so excited. I mean, they were just pumped about receiving Jesus. We're like in this kind of, you know, food court type place. And when I was telling them about the Lord, they're going like, man, they were excited. They wanted to make Jesus Christ the Lord of their life. They're like, oh, yes, yes. They were so excited. I was so excited for them too. And I'm like, this is great, you know. And some walked away, but there was a few that stayed that wanted God.
Mm-hmm.
And then they took me by my hand. They said, I want to show you something. I want to show you something. I'm like, okay, you know, and I'm going with them. And they take me into this this room. In this room, it looked like, I mean, you could think of a brick fireplace, but it was like a dark type fireplace type thing. And it was a dark room, and it had dark everything in it. And they were showing me, as excited as they were for Jesus Christ, they were excited for this darkness as well. And then they had this, there was this like altar there, and they two young, 20-year-old young men, laid their bodies flat at the altar. They were so flat, they pressed every part of their flesh down at the altar of this dark altar of Lucifer.
Mm.
And all of a sudden, this image thing is inside this fireplace-looking thing, comes out, and this pentagram comes over them like a blanket, covers these boys.
Wow.
And I'm going like, I'm thinking like, oh, my goodness, I need, you know, I'm trying to be careful because I want to let them know this ought not to be so.
Right.
Because they were so excited about Jesus, but they were just as excited about darkness. Listen, it can't be. You either going to serve the light or you're going to serve the dark. You cannot be children of the light and children of darkness. We got to come out of the darkness. And the only way that's going to happen is through the power of what Jesus did on the cross and us making Jesus the Lord of our life and being his disciple. And if you haven't yet begun to do that, we encourage you to begin to make a decision today. Go to meetmyfather.org and hear some of our testimonies. But then to get discipled, you know, go to multiplymovement.org and begin to say, you know, I'm going to do this. I am going to walk out of darkness. but we can't have them both. You got to make up your mind which one you're going to be. As a matter of fact, Pat, can you lead us in this prayer? We want to lead everybody in prayer right now, and we just wanted you to join with us and encourage you. Despite what's going on, listen, our God is in control.
You've just been listening to the highlights from VFN-TV and the Data Radio program, where we're keeping the conversation light. Listen or watch more programs and check out the VFN Torch at VFNTV.com. Don't forget about our VFN-TV app, where no matter where you are, you can take the light with you and share with your friends. We want to thank our sponsors and partners who make this program possible. Take the time and support our sponsors. You can locate them at VFNTV.com and select sponsors. If you'd like to become a sponsor or a partner, you can do so at VFNTV.com. VFN TV and the Daily Radio Program, where we're keeping the conversation light.